Chapter 18. 0828 hours, July 5th, 2553, military calendar. Avalos Avenue, Windows Village, Montero Cavern Surface, Campos Wilderness District, Planet Gao, Cordoba System. A crisp thud-bang rang out above Windows, and Castor looked up between a pair of charred rafters to find a smoky starburst spreading across the sky. Tiny tongues of flame appeared at the end of each arm and began to arc downward, and he feared the UNSC was dropping a pod of shock troopers on the village, or even a packet of weapons of mass destruction. Then two cross-shaped slivers entered the same swath of sky. As Castor watched, they drifted together and erupted into a smoky fireball, and he realized it was the humans' news-gathering drones that had been circling Wendoza. And they were no longer flying an orderly pattern. Instead, the craft were swirling about like gnats, crossing paths and occasionally colliding. Some had drifted so high they were barely visible, while others had dropped so low Castor could see the camera domes hanging beneath their bellies.
"The Gaos have lost command of their sky eyes," said Orsun. The grizzled old warrior was standing next to Castor, both of them on the third story of a burned-out guesthouse on Wendoza's Central Avenue. Their escorts were waiting below, as it would have been unwise to trust the sagging floor with more weight than necessary.
"The infidels are jamming their control frequencies," Orsun continued, "just as they are jamming our battle net."
"So it appears," Castor said. "But what is it they hope to hide?
A nuclear strike?"
"It is possible," Castor said, "but perhaps a chemical or biological attack would be easier to conceal afterward."
Orsun's lips pulled back from his broken fangs.
"They would not dare. Never underestimate what humans will dare. That has been the death of more than one shipmaster."
As Castor spoke, the droning whine of turboprop engines sounded high over the jungle behind him. He turned and saw the thin, wasted silhouette of a UNSC Falcon diving toward Wendoza, its chin gun flashing as it sprayed suppression fire along the village edge. At first it appeared the craft was just making another supply drop, but instead of releasing the usual clutch of ordnance pods, it entered an evasive zigzag and continued to descend. A single missile rose out of the jungle, but its approach was nose to nose with the Falcon. There was no time to achieve lock-on before they were past each other, and the missile arced out of sight without detonating. A heartbeat later, the rest of Castor's pack opened fire, lacing the air with plasma beams and crystal needles. The sturdy Falcon shrugged off the attacks as though it were a flying Kalkoom, then pulled up and flipped its rotors into the horizontal position. Castor was pleased to catch a glimpse of the door gunners hanging dead in their harnesses. Then the Falcon dropped out of view. He turned toward the front of the ruin and crouched down behind a fist-sized shell hole. With any luck at all, the enemy snipers would not notice the change of light as he looked through the spy hole, and he would survive long enough to figure out what the infidels were planning. What little Castor could see was not good. The Falcon had landed inside the walled compound of what the Gaos called the Hotel Wendoza, and the infidel marines were advancing up the corpse-strewn street in teams, with one squad racing forward while the other provided cover. As they passed each building, they cleared it swiftly and mercilessly, using launchers to fire grenades through the windows, then stepping inside to finish any survivors with small arms fire. Castor could not actually see any Spartans from his spy hole, but the presence of the armored demons was impossible to deny. Any Kig-Yar or human keeper of the One Freedom sympathizer who popped up behind a windowsill or peered around a corner was felled by a three-round burst. And whenever a band of Jirohanai tried to mass for a charge, they were soon disrupted by the arrival of a screaming rocket. The only feasible response was to fall back and regroup, and that was exactly what Castor would have done, had he been able to issue the command. But the battle net was being jammed, and his warriors were spread over a square kilometer of village. There was simply no way to issue the order. After a moment, Castor realized the humans were not using their comm systems either. As the squads advanced, they were signaling to each other with hand gestures and shouted commands. After watching a few moments, he even began to pick out runners relaying messages between the advancing squads and the command post inside the walled compound. Castor pulled back from the spy hole.
"The infidels are not the ones jamming our battle net," he said.
"It appears their communications have failed, too."
Orsoon cocked his head.
"You are certain? You challenge my judgment."
Orsoon looked away.
"Never, Dokap," he said. "But my understanding fails me. If the infidels are not jamming us, who is?"
"Indeed."
Castor stepped to the far corner of the room.
"Who?"
He pressed himself tight against the front wall, then peered out through the empty window back toward the jagged oval of the cave entrance. The fountain in the small courtyard continued to spray, jetting a full 5 meters into the air before splashing down into a pool pink with blood. The cobblestones surrounding the basin were pocked with grenade craters and littered with dead Marines and derelict battle rifles, and Castor could not help feeling humbled when he recalled the confidence with which he had led the charge out of the cavern and across those same cobblestones. His keepers had outnumbered the infidels by at least 4-1, and Castor was certain his victory would be an easy one. But the enemy had fought with discipline and a fierceness he had not expected from humans, and a day later he could not even say how much of his own pack remained, though he knew it was less than half of his original 500. Clearly, Castor was being punished. He had been arrogant, and now the Oracle was testing him, giving him one last chance to prove his commitment to the great journey. This time, Castor would not fail. This time, the Dokab would be guided not by pride, but by faith. No sooner had Castor renewed his resolve than he was rewarded by a glimpse of the Spartan who had humiliated him. The demon was on the opposite side of the street, fighting with his faceplate raised, racing past a window just 3 buildings up from the structure where he and his infidel companions had taken refuge after fleeing the cave mouth. Castor stretched a hand toward Orsoon.
"Beam rifle."
By the time Orsoon slapped the weapon into Castor's palm, the Spartan had vanished from sight. Knowing he would have just one chance to take his vengeance, Castor led his target by aiming the nozzle of the beam rifle at the next window. He set the aiming reticle at head level, where he would be able to take the target between the eyes, then saw a long, flat, tentacle-frilled body float into view and block his shot. So surprised that he almost opened fire anyway, Castor quickly loosened his grasp on the weapon's handle. Before he could take his next breath, the tentacle-frilled thing was joined by another floating figure, a green, undersized Hurragach.
"Orsoon, come now," Castor said. "Look at this."
Sliding along the wall behind Castor, Orsoon stepped into the corner and peered over Castor's shoulder. By then, the flat-bodied thing had passed out of view, and the Hurragach was following. Worried it would be gone before Orsoon found the right window, Castor said,
"Third building from the end, lower window. Tell me what you see."
"It is a Hurragach, Dokab," he said. "A strange color, and it appears small, but still a Hurragach. Where did it come from?"
"The demons," Castor said. "Now it is certain. They have defiled sacred ground with their presence."
Still waiting for the Spartan to appear in the second window, Castor kept his eye pressed to the scope of the beam rifle and activated the integrated battle net link inside his helmet. Once again, the repetitive screech filled his ears, pulsing and urgent.
"And now we know who is jamming the battle net," Castor said. "It is the Oracle itself, calling for our help."